contemplarlo como a las orejas, habrá que contemplarlo como a las tortillas. Tengo muchas ganas.
Liliana Felipe, she's an Argentinian woman who in the troubles in the junta of the 70s lost their husband and a sister, just disappeared off the streets because they had said something or other against the military government at the time. Liliana Felipe, thanks for tuning in. I'll see you again next week. Stay tuned for Peace and Social Justice. Bye-bye.
Welcome to another episode of the Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR 90.1 Chico and KZFR.org. Reporting from occupied Machuca territory, I'm Corey Hempsey Hunt, and I'll be your host for the next 90 minutes. Today, in the spirit of Black History Month, inspired by the Black National Anthem's call to lift every voice, in this episode you'll be hearing the voices from the top of the local university to the tents of the local triangle and a few in between. You might be surprised to know, I think it can be a bit of a spiritual experience coming up with the content for these segments. For instance, for this show, I thought about spending the next hour and a half educating listeners to the greatness of Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston, Nat Turner, Angela Davis, Miles Davis, Nikki Giovanni, Frederick Douglass, Marcus Garvey, Du Bois, Baldwin, Angelou, Chisholm, Assata Shakur, and so many more from the African diaspora, and maybe one day I will. But a voice kept reminding me, that's not my responsibility. So today won't be that day, I guess. And I'll just say, it's our personal responsibility to educate ourselves on the history of marginalized communities and how that shapes our world. There are countless resources at this point, so I hope all who can hear this take some time this month and beyond to engage in the loving labor of learning about Black history. So for me, the current housing crisis and how the unhoused are being abused is a main civil rights issue with a town called Chico. So I felt compelled to highlight some voices around that. But as we strive and continue to struggle for humanity, it is important we celebrate what we can when we can, allowing joy to refresh our determination, self-confidence, and ambition. To speak to this, we start the show with a short educational journey led by CSU Dean of College Humanities and Fine Arts, former Director of Multicultural and Gender Studies, Dr. Tracy Butts. That session will be followed by a sit-down I had at the infamous Triangle with a woman who has been unhoused for 3 years and was kind enough to give our listeners a rare glimpse into the misconceptions of people without an address. And finally, we bookend this episode of PSJ with another sapient session I had with a passionate young man who was born in Chico and now grapples with how to help his community be most humane. But first, let's start with a celebratory song. This is a remix of the Black National Anthem, Lift Every Voice, by Kirk Franklin.
Lift every voice. get it.
Let it resound.
Let it resound.
Loud as the rolling sea.
I like this part right here. Come on.
Something to it. Just to encourage you. We're going to take you to church later. Let's go!
We'll keep marching right until the victory is won.
To all my brothers out there.
Hold your head up, brothers, till the victory is won.
To all my sisters in the struggle.
Keep believing, sister, till the victory is won.
Till that day.
Till that day comes.
Hey.
Let us march on.
To victory.
Till victory.
Kirk Franklin's remix of Lift Every Voice and Sing. Without further ado, let's get into this first Sapient session with Dr. Tracy Butts. Thank you for your time, Tracy. It being February, I felt it a great idea to have you on and educate our listeners. And what better place to start than why do we celebrate Black History Month in February?
Well, you know, I often hear people and they get really upset and they always say, you know, they gave us the shortest month out of the year, mm-hmm. right? There are only 28 days, 29 in leap year days. But actually, Black History Month was founded by Dr. Carter G. Woodson.
Okay.
It originally started in 1926 and it was actually Negro History Week. And Dr. Carter G. Woodson, who was an author, a professor, scholar, actually chose February and the week in February because he wanted it to coincide with the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass.
Mm.
And that is why Black History Month, formerly Negro History Week,
mm-hmm.
Takes place in February. Right, so there's no mysterious they, or there wasn't like a group of white people
negative
who got together and
yeah.
was like, give them the shortest month. You know, there was none of that.
That's very important to recognize. Do you think it's important that we celebrate Black History Month?
You know, I do. I mean, you know, I have lots of holidays that I like, and mm-hmm. I would say that Black History Month is one of the things, even from the time that I was a kid, that falls up into the category of favorite holidays. It's kind of like a holiday for me, because I think it gives us an opportunity to actually engage in a little bit of self-reflection, to study who we are, where we come from, the obstacles we surmounted, the things that we've accomplished. You know, it's a time for us to just celebrate who we are, what we've been through, and to think strategically about where we want to go.
Mm-hmm. As someone who teaches about African American studies on around the calendar, what does your studies change or your curriculum change in that month, or how does that work?
Well, it's funny because one of the things that when I'm teaching, which I'm not doing currently, but whenever I taught African American lit during spring semester, every day in February, every class period, I would always have students begin class by singing Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is the Black National Anthem.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something when I was in college, one of my professors, when I was an undergrad, I studied with Nikki Giovanni.
Mm.
And that was one of the things that she would have us do. So when we would come in February, it was like, all right, you know what we do. And we would start the class off by singing, lift every voice and sing. And the beauty of that is, you know, lots of people didn't even know such a thing existed. Mm-hmm. But by the time the semester was over, everybody knew it. If you didn't know it coming in, you knew it then. And it was just something that I continued to do. And so now, you know, when I was teaching more regularly, students would come up, you know, and I would have white students who, one, didn't know there was such a thing. Mm-hmm. And then they go to an event and they would be all geeked because they was like, I knew the words, uh-huh. Right? I could sing along. So,
I mean, as a black person who's lived in this predominantly white community, I feel that way when I hear that song come on myself, man. Now that you mention it, and I imagine that there are some, with this small percentage that we have here in Chico, that there are some black folks out here that don't know about that song. So I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, some people say, you know. But it's interesting because I hear from both sides, you know, about, you know, we don't need a February. We don't need an African American History Month. But then those people are usually the ones I see who don't say nothing the whole rest of the year. They're like, we could talk about this all year, but they don't. But
right.
They don't. And
right.
So, you know, I was wanted to ask you, why does American history not suffice?
Well, you know, we haven't made it to a place in America where we teach a history or literature or things related to culture or about American life and society in general, one that is fully representative of this entire nation and the people who inhabit it. We know that even now, students can still go to school, and the extent of their education will be, right, they have a couple of days where they may talk about, you know, slavery, that was bad, right? And then there was the civil rights movement, right? And that was short, and now everything is good. Mm-hmm. Without talking about any of the stuff that preceded those things, any things that happened between those, and definitely not talking about any of the things that happened afterwards, and how a lot of the things that are happening now, right, have been shaped by those things that happened earlier. And that's why I think we need to continue to study until we get to a place where we're having, right, a curriculum that is truly diverse and reflective and covers all that stuff. Then we have to continue, right, to make sure that we do that work ourselves. And I think even if we do get to that place, I would still want to celebrate Black History Month. I wouldn't tell someone, right, why celebrate your birthday? Every day that you're alive should be treated like a birthday, right? I mean, there's nothing wrong with us finding joy.
There you go.
In certain things.
That's what it seems like, this stunt, this stamping out of black joy. And that's something I love to see people thrive in, you know, and it helps me thrive in. And that's why I love to see it, you know, because that feeling that it gives me, I know that it gives others as Amanda Gorman said, you know, as we shine that flame in this never-ending shade, you know, that never-ending shade. And so that's kind of like helps me personally anyways, get a little bit more flame to it. So
yes, and we need the constant shining of the light, right? Because this world will dim your shine at every chance that it gets, right? I mean, pick up the papers, look at media representation. I mean, you're always going to see something that reflects back negatively, right? Black folks did this, or black folks, and you need that reminder, right?
Yeah.
That there's good in you, right?
Greatness.
There's ability in you to overcome, right? The hugest of, mom, that there's no quitting you, that there's all those things, right, that our history revealed to us. And yet, if you don't do that, and you just look at how other people perhaps sometimes talk about you or portray you or cast you, you might not be able to be able to see those things. Mm-hmm. And so we need that.
Agreed. I couldn't agree more. I just wanted, maybe if you could speak to that, you know, a lot of people, I don't think, understand that constant, because I've spoken to some of these people and they say, oh, there is no such thing as racism in America today.
Right.
You know, and like, it's so shocking sometimes that you struggle to really convey the disconnect or find how to even bridge that gap. I wanted to give you an opportunity to maybe speak to that. Like, what is there racism in America today?
You know, yes. Come on. I mean, you know, the thing is it not as overt as in sometimes or in some instances or some cases? are we in 1619 or, you know, 1773 or something to that effect. But yes, racism exists in the same way that sexism and homophobia and transphobia and all of those things exist, right? Our understanding of things continue to evolve as we evolve as people, right? And a lot of the things that perhaps we thought we once knew or thought we once knew as truth, those things change. And you know, we move, but we take a lot of the things that we're taught with us, even in that movement. You know, and so I always laugh when people are like, well, one day racism's gonna end because all those people are just gonna die off. Right? But the thing is, in the meantime, those people are still living and they're still touching and interacting with other people, right? Who then get colored by those interactions and who, you know, adopt certain things. Right? You don't just take it and put the races in a closet somewhere. They're at the table with you. Right? They're sitting around the television with you and you pick up things. Right? And sometimes you don't even realize that you picked up things. Right?
This is Corey Hempsey Hunt, and I'm talking with Dr. Tracy Butts about the celebration of Black History Month for this Sapient session on Peace and Social Justice Show. The Peace and Social Justice Show is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by local, seasonal, and organic offerings at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade, at farmstarpizza.com and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. As we join back with the interview with Dr. Butts, I was rambling a little, but just stick with me. I think we get to the point.
So, you know, it's just interesting, even when people speak to not needing Black History Month, when, you know, even those of us that are educated, myself included, you know, I'm always waving the stick and trying to get someone to read a book about racism and stuff. But, you know, honestly, I have so much more to learn on the topic, you know, and so that's kind of where my frustration is rooted in, you know, my need to do so much more. It's kind of like when you're out of a dirty house and then you see somebody's house who's way dirtier. Then you're like, man, I can understand a dirty house, but bro, this is unacceptable behavior, you know? And so,
yeah.
I guess in a roundabout way, I was wondering, you know, what are ways that you see useful in celebrating Black History Month?
You know, I see it as just a continuing education. Yeah. It's just part of your ongoing education. And I always get a little bad because, you know, I feel like sometimes everybody ain't on the same page with me in terms of what Black History Month is supposed to be.
Okay.
And I see it as a celebration.
Okay.
Right? And it is about perhaps sharing, you know, more well-known facts and figures, but also bringing to light, right, lesser known or previously unknown facts and figures, right? It's about, in some respects, looking back at how you've progressed, right? Taking stock of places where perhaps you need to do some more work, all of those things. And so I'm a little bit of a purist. So I get mad when it's just sometimes, you know, on campus when we're planning Black History Month, people will say, oh, well, you know, we're going to look at something like Baby Boy or something. Ooh. And I'm like, that's not like, and I recognize that, right? That to me doesn't feel like it has the weight of the kinds of things that when I think about Black History Month, right, those are the kinds of things that we should be looking at. But I recognize that's not my place to police how people choose to celebrate or the places and things that they find joy in. But, you know, I mean, I love, you know, we used to always have like a Black History Month gospel concert on campus, right? Things like that. You know, a lot of universities will bring like a big name speaker to campus, right? You know, Maya Angelou, I think, came maybe one time for Black History Month or something to that effect, right? Or I might get the dates wrong or something, right? But that's what you would do. You would have a Maya Angelou come and bless the folks and all of that kind of things. Maybe a book club or something, you know.
Well, I'm surprised, you know, because when we set this up, I wasn't sure which direction you might go when you were bringing some of the ideas. Because being someone who, like I said, who's been educated for so long and has presented these ideas, I imagine that maybe you would feel like it would be more about extending that education throughout.
Well, you know, that just made me think. So a few years ago, I used to hold on campus Harlem Rent parties.
I
don't know if you do you remember for us. And so we did a thing that was ahistorical, but we used that event and it was always in February. Mm-hmm. And we called it a costume party with a cause. And we would invite people to come dressed as a person, any person living or dead, who would have been alive at some point during the Harlem Renaissance. Mm-hmm. So one, that was an attempt to get people to go out and learn about the Harlem Renaissance. When it took place, who might have been some of the figures, or who might have been some people who were alive then. That then encouraged them to do research on the person that they were going to come as so that they could get the costume together and all of that. And then, in the spirit of the Harlem Renaissance, we would try to make it a truly cultural kind of thing. So we would have people come in and perform. And one year we had someone do some live drawing on the spot, right? Just in honor of the Harlem Renaissance and the sort of artistic creation that took place during that period. And we would talk, you know, I think we would do like a little trivia quiz, like who knows some of the figures of the Harlem Renaissance and things like that. Mm-hmm. To me, right, that's a perfect way of combining, right, something that is fun and entertaining with something that is also educational, mm-hmm. and providing people with an opportunity to learn more, but to also engage in a little bit of investigation and research on their own.
Mm.
Right.
That's what it's truly about, is, yeah, that inspiration. Something I'm not the greatest at, and so I'm totally open to your ideas around. It's interesting. I go back and forth, and I'd like to hear your ideas on that as well. You know, on our, because I know it's not our responsibility as Black folks to educate non-Black folks to our humanity, our cultures, and our plight. But it's helpful, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And so I kind of maybe just hear your ideas around that. Do you think that's something that Black folks should do, shouldn't do? Or?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, there was a meeting on campus to plan, and people were trying to, you know, figure out what we might do for this upcoming Black History Month. Mm-hmm. And so someone's like, well, maybe we should do this because it would then teach, you know, people who aren't Black about these things. And one of the students, which, you know, I was really sort of moved by, said, I need you all to understand, right, that, right, everyone's welcome and everyone's welcome to learn, but this is about, right, our particular edification, and we want you to join us, but we can't, we can't necessarily cater this
center
to you, right? Mm-hmm. Right. This is a space in which we're centered, and we invite you into that space, and we invite you to learn and to join us, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this can't be the place where that is where you're centered.
Very important, I think. And you mentioned this earlier already too, just that idea of, you know, it didn't begin with slavery and end with, you know, the Civil Rights Bill. You know, I see that often in the, not so much curriculum, you know, because it's just people, but the presentations over the month that I see so often is just, you know, this horrible thing happened, and then we helped them get free.
Yeah.
Oh, terribly. And then it's like, and now we all good. And then if it goes any further than this, and then we voted for Barack, and then we're all
right,
good. You know, and it's
right.
Like these, it's this refirsting first off, you know, of our beginning, which is long before we even encountered Europeans, and just ignoring all of that and centering, like you said, just centering the European experience of African Americans instead of making it more about the total African experience, which begins, you know, in Africa and continues way past the civil rights with...
And making it diasporic as well, right? Because it wasn't just that it was a straight shot from Africa to here, right?
You.
I mean,
yes,
right? The ship stopped at places, you know, in between.
And there was powerful events that took place in these places.
And so certainly, right? I mean, being able to have that kind of wider lens, to be able to look deeper at things, it's the kind of thing that you need. And you know, when you're in school and you're taking a class, I mean, in college, a semester is 15 weeks. Right, and so if we're going to do a history that is truly reflective of all, there's no way that you're going to cover everything in 15 weeks, right? It's going to be, in many cases, a trot. And so even if we get to the place where we have a truly diverse and reflective curriculum, we're going to still have to engage, right, in our own kind of research and study, because there's no way you can cover it all, right?
So... thank you so much for your time, Tracy.
Okay.
And this is a segment on KZFR, Peace and Social Justice Show, that I call Sapient Sessions. And at the end of these sessions, I like to ask my guests, voluntarily, of course, if they would like to present me with three questions they'd like our listeners to ask themselves around pretty much anything, I guess, you know, the things that you think are important and productive and helpful. And then a favorite proverb of yours.
I really got to think about that one. But a couple of questions. I would probably start, and I'm going to try to keep it Black History Month theme.
Please.
Right? So, what was the last book you read by a Black author?
Thank you.
Right? And if you don't have an answer and you can't think of it's been that long, then I want to challenge you. Pick up a book, right? In the spirit of Black History Month, find a book. Name a civil rights activist other than Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. And if you can't, I'm gonna again challenge you to do a little research, right? And find the name of someone. I should do a music one. So, what forms of American music have been influenced by the spirituals?
And by the spirituals, you mean?
The spirituals, the old Negro spirituals. I want you to think about the forms of... or the genres of American music that have been influenced by the Black spirituals. And if you don't know the answer, I want you to go and look it up.
Great questions. Love this segment. It's always mind-blowing. And then that was nonetheless there. Can you give me a Tracy proverb to send us out of here?
It's not a proverb per se, but it is there's a quote, and I'm going to mess the quote up, but it's in Zora Neale Hurston's "Their Eyes Were Watching God," and in the book, Janie is having a dispute with her husband, Jody. And he, of course, his feelings gets engaged. And so, you know, he tries to, you know, sort of hit her below the belt. And he tells her that she's getting old and what have you. And the thing that she says back to him is she was like, you know, stop mixing up my looks with my doings. And I love that quote.
What does that mean?
Stop mixing up my looks with my doings. Like, what it is that she looks like has nothing to do whatsoever with what it is that she's doing. Right? And we often find that sometimes people mix up our looks with what we look like with our ability to do something or what it is that we're doing.
Say that.
So,
Tracy, I appreciate you so much.
Well, Corey, thank you so much.
Your work is undervalued, and I want to give you your flowers right here, and truly, on the behalf of myself, our Black community, and the rest of our community, say thank you so much for all your works.
Thank you. You made me think of my grandmother, because that could have been a proverb, because she used to say, don't wait till I'm dead. Give me my flowers now.
That's where
while I can enjoy them. That's right. Yeah.
All right, blessings to you.
All right, blessings to you.
So much gratitude to Dr. Butts again for another amazing Sapien session. I hope you guys enjoyed that and gained something from it. I don't usually answer those three questions that I have my guests ask, but for Black History Month, and since hers were pertinent to that, in celebration of that, I'll answer the first being Ibram Kendi's Stamp from the Beginning. I highly recommend that for anyone interested in looking for understanding of racist ideas. And then the second would be Fannie Lou Hamer, a civil rights activist that many don't know, and we should all give her praises and respects. Rest in peace, Fannie Lou Hamer. This is the Peace and Social Justice Show on KZFR 90.1 and KZFR.org. Next is a local hip-hop artist, Nathan Joyner, doing a reading of Maya Angelou's Human Family.
I note the obvious differences in the human family. Some of us are serious, some thrive on comedy. Some declare their lives are lived with true profundity, and others claim they really live the real reality. The variety of our skin tones can confuse, bemuse, delight, brown and pink and beige, purple, tan, blue and white. I've sailed upon the seven seas and stopped in every land. I've seen the wonders of the world, not yet one common man. I know 10,000 women called Jane and Mary Jane, but I've not seen any two who were really the same. Mirror twins are different, although their features jibe, and lovers think quite different thoughts while laying side by side. We love and lose in China, we weep on England's moors, and laugh and moan in Guinea, and thrive on Spanish shores. We seek success in Finland, are born and die in Maine. In minor ways we differ, in major we're the same. I note the obvious differences between each sort and type, but we are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike. We are more alike, my friends, than we are unalike.
Thanks, Nathan, for that. Human Family, Maya Angelou, rest in peace to Maya Angelou. Yeah, just Human Family, that idea means so much, especially in these times when it's time for us to look out for each other. And we got so much going on as this big family to figure out and to process on our own and together. One thing we got to do in order to start that, in my opinion, is sit down and talk with each other, and to give listeners an opportunity to listen to a voice from that community. I went down to the local Triangle and spoke with someone who's been unhoused for 3 years and now speaks out against this crime against humanity. And I made a Sapien session out of this conversation with
Rhonda Magnuson.
Thank you for your time. I just wanted to ask you a few questions. And I saw you in a video that was really rhetorical and persuasive, with just giving understanding that I see a lot of people lacking in the community. And I wanted to give you an opportunity to spread that voice a little bit further. So I thank you for your time and your bravery.
Thank you.
So how long have you been unhoused?
I've been about 3 years, tomorrow, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I saw you answer a question that I hear a lot of people ask. A lot of people say, those people are out there because they want to be in, and they're just hanging out. What do you say to those people?
I say that is absolutely, positively wrong. If you come out here and talk to these people, you'll find a lot of them have been out here for a very long time, and they're from here. As far as I can see, this is a city that has really failed. It's less fortunate. There's three things causing this from what I have researched. When you come out of prison and get paroled, they have to parole you in a place where there's homeless services if you have no place to go. People are being paroled here, and the services are lacking quite a bit. The second one is people that have their children taken away. They have no more income. The kids are gone. They're out here. If you go online and you look up homeless services in Northern California, which by law, every service anywhere in the United States has got to be on a list, you'll find Chico in Oroville, California. Come here, the services, everything that you possibly need. But once again, you get here, and there's a lot of people that have positions that are using their personal opinion to inflict or affect people that they shouldn't, because they have no understanding. Yes, there is a lot of drugs and alcohol out here. That is a given. I don't care. When you have to deal with this and survive this from day to day, wow. I don't even think about it. That's what I do. I don't think about it. But I don't blame them. And I've seen people come here, and the services weren't what they were. They weren't using drugs and alcohol, but they were out here on the street, and there it is, you know. And when you're freezing, that alcohol is going to keep you warm, or so on and so forth. I don't judge the addict. I judge the drug that causes the addict. Sure. You know, and people aren't looking at it that way, period. I always have. I come from a family of a long line of drugs and alcohol. It terrified me to the point of no. I choose not. Because it was just nothing but destruction all the way around. And 40 some odd years later, some of them are just starting to come out of it. And I'm looking forward to going home now, because they have straightened out. They have changed their lives. You know, it just took growing up for them, and a reason why. I think anybody can do it if they choose. But then again, you got to be in the right circumstances in order to make that choice, period. And being out here on a street freezing to death or hungry is not the place to make that choice, by no means. It's not a choice. It's scary as hell. Scary as hell.
Yeah, would you like to speak to any of that as far as just, you know, being a woman out here?
I have been very, very lucky. I don't know. Well, I do know why, because a lot of people put a lot of hands on me when I first got here. And but from what I've seen with other women, I can honestly say that the majority of them have been raped or even worse. I got lucky.
When you say a lot of people put hands on you, can you explain that a little bit?
Safety-wise, I had a couple people that showed up with my shelter, which is this man right behind me. Ricky has been my shelter for 3 years. Couple others, Eric and another one, they would sleep beside my tent. At first, I first realized that someone was doing that. I was very creeped out about it. But then I realized if they had meant me harm, they were alone with me many hours during the night. They could have caused me harm. Come to find out, they were protecting me. They were keeping me safe. And then I was banned from all services because I was from Maine, East Coast. I was fresh meat. You know, I wasn't ever homeless. I never experienced anything like this. And we don't have this problem back there. We cure it, per se. But this was completely different. And I guess a lot of people recognized my fear and my suffering, and they stepped in and took hold, kept me fed, kept me sheltered, kept eyes on me. I've been only attacked twice, and that was by women. Other than that, I've not been. attacked by any men. Thank God. Knock on wood. But other than that, I have been pretty much safe out here. My biggest fear is more of the community, and because when they look at me sitting out there on that sidewalk, I can see the rage. I can see the anger. I can see the hate. And I would say I'm more afraid of them than I am anything else. But other than that, I have fared pretty well out here, and I owe that to the homeless. No other.
I've spent very, very little time out here, but the little time that I have, I've noticed, yeah, the people driving by with the glares and the horn honking, and just a lot of misunderstanding and hatred, like you say. What would you say to people, maybe not them in particular, but someone that's, you know, has some similar ideas to that just has that misunderstanding of people out here just trying to get by and find and get a chance?
Right. That I would say, because there's a lot of not just glaring at us or calling us or whatever. There's stuff flying. I actually had bullets flying one night. It was right there. I was right here. And all I could do was put my head in my sleeping bag and pray. I was standing here. I almost took a ball in the head. You want to judge people because you think that they're criminals or committing crimes or on drugs or whatever the case may be. But when you ride by me and you throw something at me, you're even guiltier than they are. By far. By far. And you have no business of the judgment that you do not have, because you're an ignorant, stupid human being, and you are the ones that inflict and affect this world in a way that causes it to self-destruct. So when you're riding by somebody and you want to have an opinion, keep it to your damn self, because I am keeping my opinions to myself. When you're riding by here doing that, I'm just saying God bless us all. That's it, period. There's no need. And you're more ignorant and stupid than the people that you're judging. Period.
Period. What do you think the people here in the Triangle need most?
Everybody needs a home. You will not hear anybody out here, not anybody, and I don't care if they've been here for 25 years. I don't care. I spoke to one yesterday, 25, almost 27 years out here. He was paroled here long ago. And he said without a doubt that if he had a chance to go in, he would be there without even thinking twice or even once. And I think we all would say that. I would give anything. I can't even express what my eyes have witnessed. I can't put it into words, and I've desperately tried. This is where we go wrong, people. And this is why in Chico, California, you have a 93% rise in your homeless rate in 5 years. And that, people, is only because you don't understand what you're judging. You sleep on this street for a night. You wake up in the morning and you got two thoughts. And they're the basic same thought. My God, I'm alive. And the next one is, oh my God, I'm alive. If you were half the person that I am, or we are for that matter, you wouldn't do what you do. You would look at it as what it is, suffered, neglected, idiocy, straight up wrong. Because a 16-year-old girl hits this street, there's no reason why 20 years later she's still here and she doesn't even know her own damn name. And we have one of those. They call her No Name. We have a couple of them. And we have our street children. We have, they called us their elders, their parents or whatever. This is a community. This is a family. And unfortunately, we don't have the means to cure it ourselves because we damn sure would. Easily. Because we have the understanding behind it. I can't even tell you. Nor would I want to, and I pray to God that there is nobody else that has to ever suffer this. Because it's not what you think. It's not a day that goes by that I don't think I could either get out by the will of God in a good way, or just get the hell out, period. But that's what my life is for me, as it is for many of us. So before you look at me with your hatred and your judgment, you know this. I am depleted daily, but I still have the will, and I still have the understanding. And by the grace of God, I still got my heart, because I am so suffered. So wake up, America. Do right by your people. In that case, we all do right by each other.
It's something we all need to hear, and I hope people are hearing it, and it's hitting them in the spirit that can help us all make the changes and do the things that we need to do. I'd also wanted to ask, just from your perspective, what can listeners do to directly affect the peoples here in the Triangle, like immediately, not waiting for, you know, local government to do something?
Stop being so anal and just reach out. Just take the hand of somebody and say, hey, you know what? I got you. Because I probably guarantee you this. There's not one that won't take that hand. It may be a little bit fearful at first, but if you keep on showing them that you give a damn, they'll reach back. And two wrongs don't make it right, but two rights will make it perfect.
This is Corey Hunt, and I'm speaking with Rhonda Magnuson, a local person who's been unhoused for 3 years. I went down and spoke with Rhonda because I thought it was important to give a voice to these people who are being so drastically affected at this time. And as we always, the way we always wrap up the Sapien session, I asked them to give three questions and a proverb. And here is Rhonda's.
First question. Do you have any idea what you would do out here if you were me? My second question. Would it hurt to just open your eyes and look at it for what it is? Maybe put yourself in that situation and go from there. And I think that's where wisdom comes from. I think that's where mine has come from. I have tried for a very long time, because I have asked myself those same questions throughout my life. What would I do if I were, or so on and so forth. And I can honestly say to you, this trash thing that they got, these people are going through so much in their heads and in their minds and everything else. They don't think about that piece of trash. I'm sorry. They don't. I wish I could. That's the only way I can back that, because they don't. And no matter how many times I've yelled and screamed at them, I realized after watching them, they're not conscious of a lot of their doings. And that is the effect of something that was designed in a lab. It's called a drug. And you know what? Our government's designed them. So Where would you be? What would you do? Think about this. If you are riding, I use this for an example a lot. You're riding down the road every day of the week and you see this pile of trash at the end of your road, and every day it just irritates you to no end. Well, you got to think too, there's all kinds of other people that are driving down that road feeling the same way. But what if one day you got up and you 15 minutes early, you put a pair of gloves on and you drove down the road with a bag and you picked that trash up? Here's a couple of ways of looking at that. Number one, you got something to be proud of because you did it. Number two, you got another thing to look at. In the morning, you're not going to wake up and you're going to drive down that road and that trash is going to be there. You're going to drive down that road and you're going to see that trash gone. And you did it. You're proud. But also, Sue and George and Frank has also been driving down that road, yelling and screaming about that trash every single day. Now, they're going to work and they're saying, trash is gone. Yahoo. See, people, it doesn't take much to make an effect instead of an affected. Why has this country and this world failed its people so drastically? And why do we not fix it?
Great questions. Again, I thank you so much for your time. Is there a quote that you would like to give us, that something that you think about, something, maybe a mantra of yours that keeps you thriving?
Do unto others as you would have done unto you.
Thank you so much, Rhonda. On behalf of our community, I apologize thoroughly, and I'm going to continue to do what I can to try to affect change. And
thank
you for doing your part to affect change. You know, even though, you know, you're the one that's, yeah.
Not the only one. I'm just one of thousands.
Yes.
Hundreds and thousands.
So many. Too many.
Exactly. But it can be different. We just got to look at it and think, would we want to be there? Hell no, people. And do everything in your power to not be. Everything. That means put the bottle down, put the freaking drug down, whatever it takes. Pay attention to your family. Love them. That's another thing that causes homelessness. You don't got family to back you, there's no home. So be mindful. That's all it takes.
Oh, I'm speechless and humbled and beyond grateful for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
That concludes another segment of Sapient Sessions. Thank you to Rhonda Magnuson. And as she said, you know, just get involved where you can, how you can. And we'll overcome this. At some point, we shall overcome, as the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. so eloquently stated. If you enjoy programs such as this that give you an opportunity to hear from the most marginalized from our community, you can tip your favorite show at KZFR.org. So, of course, feel free to slide over there and show some love to the Peace and Social Justice Show. And again, thanks so much to Miss Magnuson for giving me her time and being her unapologetic self. And in celebration of those who do just that, like Dr. Butts and a fellow coming up next, here's a song that does just as Dr. Butts referred, and just shines that light and gives us that reminder that it's okay to be ourselves. And it's not only okay, it's great. This song is Common featuring Stevie Wonder, and it's called Courageous.
Am I here in the flesh? You can take it or not. I'm not claiming, pretending to be what I'm not. I ain't nobody's angel. When this world try to change it, who you are, just embrace it. Stay courageous.
Unapologetic, unashamed with it. Times in life, I came with it. When the unseen became vivid. Of different flesh, same spirit. It's like a lyric by Stevie Wonder. Through inner visions, you can see the wonder. Spent time in life being a runner. Couldn't run from what I seen this summer. Trying to understand where we are in time. Looking at the world, keeping God in mind. I know it's a peace, it's hard to find. I went out there and found mine inside. I'm alive on arrival. My life is more than survival. You can live and be live too. That's how heaven will describe you.
If you want something real, I'm right here in the flesh. You can take it or not. I'm not claiming, pretending to be what I'm not. I ain't nobody's angel. When this world try to change it, who you are, just embrace it. Stay courageous and be real. Yeah, I'm here in the flesh. You can take it or not. I'm not claiming, pretending to be what I'm not. I ain't nobody's angel. When this world try to change it, who you are, just embrace it. Stay courageous.
Look life in the eye, I can see clearer. A kingdom's coming, you can hear it near us. Stay close to the sincerest. Those the ones that become mirrors. Speak no hate, let love hear us. Times on me is when I was fearless. There's a self I gotta take care of. So with the world, I could truly share love. And be a bearer of fruit on the planet. God is steps I don't take for granted. Time is manic, we internalize. Honor that little boy or little girl inside. Pray these words arise to the ears of angels. We let go of fears that we came through. Change is beautiful as it is painful. The world is yours, don't let it change you. Don't let it change you.
I'm right here in the flesh, you can take it or not. I'm not claiming, pretending to be what I'm not. I ain't nobody's angel. When this world try to change it, who you are, just embrace it. Stay courageous and be real. Yeah, I'm here in the flesh, you can take it or not. I'm not claiming, pretending to be what I'm not. I ain't nobody's angel. When this world try to change it, who you are, just embrace it. Stay courageous.
Stevie Wonder with Courageous. Such a powerful message, man. A beautiful one. Just something that you'll hear me reference often, probably on this program, from the looks of it, will be the Amanda Gorman poem, The Hill We Climb. And so to give listeners a reference and just give us all another opportunity to hear those wonderful words. Here that is Amanda Gorman with The Hill We Climb.
Mr. President, Dr. Biden, Madam Vice President, Mr. Emhoff, Americans and the world. When day comes, we ask ourselves, where can we find light in this never-ending shade? The loss we carry, a sea we must wade. We've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. in the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet, the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished. We, the successors of a country and a time where a skinny black girl descended from slaves and raised by a single mother can dream of becoming president, only to find herself reciting for one. And yes, we are far from polished, far from pristine, but that doesn't mean we are striving to form a union that is perfect. We are striving to forge our union with purpose, to compose a country committed to all cultures, colors, characters, and conditions of man. And so we lift our gaze not to what stands between us, but what stands before us. We close the divide because we know to put our future first. We must first put our differences aside. We lay down our arms so we can reach out our arms to one another. We seek harm to none and harmony for all. Let the globe, if nothing else, say this is true. That even as we grieved, we grew. That even as we hurt, we hoped. That even as we tired, we tried. That we'll forever be tied together, victorious. Not because we will never again know defeat, but because we will never again sow division. Scripture tells us to envision that everyone shall sit under their own vine and fig tree, and no one shall make them afraid. If we're to live up to our own time, then victory won't lie in the blade, but in all the bridges we've made. That is the promised glade, the hill we climb, if only we dare it. Because being American is more than a pride we inherit. It's the past we step into and how we repair it. We've seen a force that would shatter our nation rather than share it. Would destroy our country if it meant delaying democracy. And this effort very nearly succeeded. But while democracy can be periodically delayed, it can never be permanently defeated. In this truth, in this faith we trust, for while we have our eyes on the future, history has its eyes on us. This is the era of just redemption. We feared it at its inception. We did not feel prepared to be the heirs of such a terrifying hour, but within it we found the power to author a new chapter, to offer hope and laughter to ourselves. So while once we asked, how could we possibly prevail over catastrophe? Now we assert, how could catastrophe possibly prevail over us? We will not march back to what was, but move to what shall be, a country that is bruised but whole, benevolent but bold, fierce and free. We will not be turned around or interrupted by intimidation, because we know our inaction and inertia will be the inheritance of the next generation. Our blunders become their burdens. But one thing is certain. If we merge mercy with might and might with right, then love becomes our legacy and change our children's birthright. So let us leave behind a country better than the one we were left. With every breath from my bronze pounded chest, we will raise this wounded world into a wondrous one. We will rise from the gold-limbed hills of the west. We will rise from the windswept northeast where our forefathers first realized revolution. We will rise from the lake-rimmed cities of the midwestern states. We will rise from the sun-baked south. We will rebuild, reconcile and recover in every known nook of our nation, in every corner called our country. Our people, diverse and beautiful, will emerge battered and beautiful. When day comes, we step out of the shade, aflame and unafraid. The new dawn blooms as we free it. For there is always light, if only we're brave enough to see it. If only we're brave enough to to be it.
Thanks again to Amanda Gorman, the National Poet Laureate, for The Hill We Climb, something I just continually go back to, and hope you guys utilize those words as well and look into just be brave enough to see the light in the words there. There's so much. Next, I'll be speaking with a young activist, Addison Winslow, about the unhoused crisis. But first, a commercial.
Have you been thinking about recent events in the news and not felt like you've had time to process it or connect it to other big issues? KZFR takes on issues happening in our communities and creates space to consider them. There's no yelling. KZFR offers civil dialogue about issues that matter. And then there's good music to think by. Don't forget to support KZFR in 2021. You can always go online to kzfr.org and make a donation. It keeps us on the air. KZFR is a bridge between people, in the station and on the airwaves. Please donate generously. KZFR.org. Thank you.
This last segment is another Sapient session. I had the honor of sitting down with a local activist who was extremely passionate about unhoused outreach and has some interesting insights around the crisis of housing that we're having. And so it was my honor and pleasure to sit with Addison Winslow. As we join this session, he's describing his perception of the housing crisis in Chico.
It's getting worse. That's probably like first thing to recognize. Everybody sort of has this idea of what homelessness looks like, because we have these real, like, well-funded, coordinated efforts to demonize people and to take these the visceral images of homelessness, which is that people people have trash in their camps and people go to the bathroom and they're always like these things that people have to do. I think it's more practical and it's more accurate to look at it as something that comes from out of the housing crisis. And so we've had worsening affordability consistently for 40 years, except for some short periods of like in a year of economic crisis where there'll be like a little bit of a dip in rent. Other than that, rent has gone straight up. Incomes have not followed it. And in Chico, it's been particularly bad because of a shortage of land, because of the city hasn't really supported like construction of large multifamily projects. So rent burden is something that's just getting worse and worse on people. And that was happening before the campfire. And I think it's really important to see how bad that was happening before the campfire. And so we have a new housing element update that's coming up. That's like part of the general plan. So this big idea for how we're going to direct development in Chico. The housing element, when it was last updated, is 2014. And we were at something like there's certain goal sets for low-income housing and very low-income housing. We had that numbers in the hundreds, like 600, 900, while the amount of units to build was something like 9 to 11. And we haven't really progressed much since then. We had these like state funds called redevelopment previously that we used to construct low income housing to like pay into developers. Those went away in 2012, and our capacity to produce housing that people on fixed incomes like Social Security or in very low wage incomes can afford is just completely been eviscerated, and it hasn't gotten any better in any ways. And then the campfire happened. And I think that's just like the context of like how bad it's like this crazy low amount where we have no ability whatsoever to produce housing that people can afford at the bottom, like low income and very low income. And then we lost like 15% of the county's housing stock. And so it should come as no surprise to anybody that homelessness seems so bad since then. And there is a lot of attempts to blame that on like, people say that people are coming from somewhere else, and there's all these little like conspiratorial ideas that to justify like what we're seeing, and that it's somehow like it's like people's fault, the city's fault for being too kind to people that's caused this. We're actually in some ways looking at like the numbers for how little low income housing has been produced. I think it's not as bad as it could be because so many people have left the county. That's the only reason that we have this. There's few people that are living in public spaces and such.
Thousands, yeah, it could be tens of thousands. And it seems to be growing, not slowing, and the solutions continue to be obstructed. And so where I keep hearing this, there's somewhere for them to go. Why don't they just go to these shelters? Is it true for there is somewhere for the people in the Triangle to go, for instance?
No, there's not enough options available, or what the police have been telling people, because the police have to like confront that at some point. Like, yeah. They do give out a piece of paper that has this list of services. Uh-huh. None of those are available to give them a place to sleep.
Okay.
Unless you're a domestic violence victim, you might be able to get into Catalyst. What they tell people is you can sleep in the public right of way. Yeah. If you leave 4 feet, it's enough for ADA for a wheelchair to pass. Mm-hmm. So there are some wide sidewalks in town. That doesn't apply downtown because, well, you got to move during the day because of the CityLight ordinance. It doesn't apply in the Civic Center because there's specific closing hours there. It doesn't apply in parks and greenways because there's these new ordinances to criminalize camping.
And you can't have any of your things or any covering pretty much, you know, and it's raining out there.
What the former supervisor of the Target team told me was that cities under the ruling Martin versus Boise, so this kind of like legal framework for against criminalizing homelessness, mm-hmm. The cities are able to choose whether they to allow people structures, mm-hmm. and the city of Chico has chosen not to allow people structures. Mm-hmm. So rain or shine, like because police are trying to be, even while kicking people out, sort of nice to avoid being seen as like unnecessarily cruel.
Yes.
They're letting people, like, you know, give. They gave out a second 72-hour notice at the Triangle again. And, like,
yeah.
You know, you'd think, like, well, they don't need to do that legally, but they're trying to – it's kind of like they're going the extra mile. But ultimately, they're telling people that, like, you have to be willingly in violation of the law just to protect yourself from the elements. They're not going to create a law that says when it's bad weather, you can sleep under a tent. Mm-hmm. You know, they might tolerate that, but that leaves the people always at the whim of the officer. If the officer mm-hmm. wants to file them on that, it's just keeping them perpetually in violation of the law. So whenever the police feel like enforcing the law, they have the opportunity to.
Yeah, it's so cruel, man. It's hard to. I see why so few people are actually looking at it, man. But if we all take a closer look at it, I think we can do a better job than what's being done so far. When we were setting this up, you mentioned you wanted to speak on the consolidated services plan.
Right. So this is something, it's a little bit shrouded in mystery because some of this unfolded in closed-door meetings during the Sean Morgan's last tenure as mayor. I was talking 2016 to 2018.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it has to do with the Jesus Center's relocation program. I think maybe that's a good vantage point to like see what this whole consolidation program is. The Jesus Center is privately funded largely,
mm-hmm.
Which gives them a little bit of like leeway because the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development has a like advocates for policy of housing first. They don't provide nearly enough funds to like make that a reality or anything, but housing first, that people should be just given housing, and we can try to work out mental health, drug addiction things like subsequently. That's the best strategy to propose. Mm-hmm. That's what HUD supports. So the Jesus Center being dependent on private donations allows them to pursue like a different philosophy around that. Mm-hmm. And there's a different philosophy that is advocated for by a guy named Robert Marbot. The Jesus Center had Robert Marbot come here and speak a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea basically is, well, enabling is an issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this perpetuating, like, it's like a cultural thing is what homelessness is, sort of the idea that it gets to. And people are being enabled into this culture. So what you got to do is suppress that and use services to sort of like forward that. So it's sort of these like punitive models of like in some of the places that have gone off of Robert Marbot's model, they'll make people sleep outside on the concrete if they like violate some rule. They come too late, you know. Which in some respects, you know, it's like maybe the, I don't maybe if you show up late to the tourist shelter or some other program, they won't even let you in at all.
Yeah.
But all this is, it's like, don't, you know, make food conditional, make all kinds of services conditional, and that's one. And then the other is to make sure that all your services are in one place. You can kind of contain it in one area. This is really common. In San Francisco, it's the Tenderloin. In L.A., it's Skid Row. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a decades-long policy of trying to concentrate the services, so you concentrate the people. They're living on the street in one particular area, and it's just sort of like that neighborhood can, you know, do its thing. So so here, the containment model or the consolidation program is looking at Fair Street, that area where there's the tourist shelter located, mm-hmm. right, the fairgrounds. Mm-hmm. Next to the tourist shelter is this BMX site that's now being discussed as a spot for a sanctioned campground because the city owns it. And the Jesus Center is moving onto Fair Street too. And so if all services are moved just to Fair Street and you have all these ordinances making sleeping outside illegal in the rest of the city, you can just selectively not enforce them in that particular area, and Fair Street becomes just the area that's like our Skid Row. And I think that's seen by like business owners as sort of a better model than people just hanging out downtown and people hanging out in the neighborhood some. And certainly it keeps them from having to come like overcome all these different NIMBYs and all these different areas that wouldn't want services nearby, let alone they come near their own single family homes out in the suburbs. And so this area, the Mulberry neighborhood, that's right by Fair Street, it's kind of tucked in there between 20th and Fair. Mm-hmm. They weren't incorporated until last year, so they never really had to be consulted about any of this. Mm-hmm. And there's always been historically, it's been an underprivileged neighborhood anyway, and that's mm-hmm. just as they do in other cities. That's where they've decided to sort of, shuttle eventually, just by the sway that the city has in like allowing, you know, use permits and like zoning and providing funds, they can kind of shuttle everything over to that way and sort of like give it the push. Right, and that's I think is the conservative strategy. That's not necessarily public, but has been written up by public officials under the conservatives and hasn't really been challenged. The liberals in their 2 years in power did not challenge that effectively.
You're listening to KZFR, and I'm Corey Hunt speaking with local activist Addison Winslow about the unhoused crisis. This is the Peace and Social Justice Show, and Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Service. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier service for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24 delivery service. And by Tires Plus, complete auto repair in downtown Chico at the corner of 6th and Broadway. Tires Plus offers alignments, repairs, and maintenance, as well as tire sales, repair, and service at 624 Broadway Street. Open from 8:30 to 5:30, Monday through Saturday. Find Tires Plus Complete Auto Repair on Facebook and at 342-8338.
You wanted to speak on how badly we failed with affordable housing.
So we have these state-required assessments of housing needs for very low-income and low-income housing. We've, I think, hit about 1% of our targets. Some years into the into the time period that it covers. So we haven't had any affordable housing projects because what we used to rely on for affordable housing, called redevelopment funds, was taken away by the state in 2012. And at about the same time, the city was of Chico was going through their own financial issues as they thought we were going into bankruptcy. That was what the city staff was saying. So we chopped down departments. I think we cut from like 11 to 5 departments or something like that. One of those was like neighborhood services department. And housing department, we now have like 2 employees that are under community development. We have no housing department anymore. So we don't have employees that are trying to like broker the deals and like make the opportunities, help facilitate the opportunities for low income housing to come about. We weren't able to adapt to the loss of redevelopment funds that we depended on for low income housing. So we've had basically no low income housing built for almost a decade now, and that's just let us see like it's led to escalating homelessness, and in spite of the disasters, and even with all this money that's come into like FEMA money and everything that's come in. We've had basically nothing work out, and we're the largest affordable housing, even if you could call it that, proposals of the 2 years since the campfire, were the Orange Street Shelter. It was shut down after the president of Chico State wrote a letter against it, and allegedly the city manager called Walmart and asked them to take the money back for it. And Simplicity Village. And Simplicity Village was in an industrial zoned area, and it was sued by Rob Berry into being an infeasible project. So, you know, and it's not particularly a coincidence. I think it's worth noting that even as these apartments are coming up, they're all billed as luxury, you know, and developers like to do that because even if they don't do anything that really makes it more than a basic apartment, they still bill it like that. And then, you know, maybe somebody's going to think, well, this is nice, so I'll pay extra for this being nice. And they can kind of do cheap amenities and then pull more money out of it. It just makes sense financially for them trying to pull the most money out of it. But we did have a decent amount of apartments pop up over last year's. Still, last year we had about almost four times as many single-family homes built as multifamily units. And the year before that, 2019, we had more multifamily units built, but it was still it was about half as much as single-family homes built. And most of the land, by far the vast majority of land that we have zoned for housing, goes specifically and exclusively to single-family homes, which are only available to people at a higher income. Mm-hmm. And that's pushed for by right-wingers, for sure. Conservatives see that as a way of kind of like, you know, it accommodates the lifestyle. Say this is like American dream type of stuff, and we want an excellent quality of life here. Even like the this quote from the president of the Chico Builders Association, that if people wanted to live in apartments, they would just go to Sacramento, right? Which is like, notwithstanding like affordability issues in Sacramento and people from Sacramento looking for a cheaper place to live,
yeah,
and considering Chico, yeah, and that, and which the same goes with companies that have employees that they're looking for a cheaper place to be able to like operate their business. The most important thing, I think, that the past Liberal City Council, the 2 years we had a Liberal majority, the most important thing they did, in hindsight, me looking back, what I think is they asked for Chico to be exempted from the state bill. It's AB, I forget what it's called. It was a state bill that was put forward by James Gallagher that would have allowed developers to bypass environmental reviews for housing development projects. And this was phrased as like, we've had disasters, we need to get some housing projects off the ground, which is like, I feel very much strongly for. The thing is what this would have done, what it's done in other areas, is it's allowed developers to go to exactly what they would have the most issues with in environmental review that they couldn't do in the future if it wasn't the case that they were able to bypass it and go through and launch those projects. And those projects are sprawling suburban single-family home developments. So the ones they make the most money off of. You just eat up all the land, chop it up, and sell it off to some like wealthy people. You can get retirees into it. People with those that received insurance settlements can buy them. And it's not really like what's available to people, you know, working people, let alone people on that fixed income. And those people that are like living in the parks right now, even with an income, that's not enough, obviously, to afford a mortgage on a house like that.
Exactly.
It's really clear that the conservatives, those that we have on the council, those at least that are conscious and have any idea of like how housing policy and how like zoning and development works, want us to go in the direction of producing, if not exclusively, for the most part, some single family homes. Mayor Coolidge had given a State of the City address. He gave it again, mostly the same address with a few updates, on the occasion of the Chamber of Commerce releasing their special report. Just this last week. And in that special report, the Chamber of Commerce noted that we have a severe shortage of housing and we need housing that is, quote, available or affordable to the workforce. But in their goals listed, they said specifically we want to increase the production of single-family housing. They don't explain why they chose specifically single-family housing when they're talking about housing that's affordable to like a workforce. Because they reference like businesses saying that's a need. Their employees need housing. But somehow they got this in their mind that this should be specifically single-family zoning. And I think we're going to see in the next 4 years a very concerted effort to push through as many large developments of single-family homes that they can, because this is just the opportunity for them to get around the environmental review or to just get through it, and to sprawl out Chico, which makes money for people. It demographically leans towards like whiter, more affluent people that are their constituents, and that should be concerning to all of us.
This is Corey Hunt on KZFR speaking with local activist Addison Winslow about the unhoused crisis.
The other, and you know that's so informative. A lot of these things that you're sharing with us, and then to turn that information into wisdom, we have to act. And so I'd like to ask, how can listeners affect this situation directly right now? In your opinion, and from your perspective.
It's tough in the place that we're at, definitely, because we're looking at, based on what happened in the last election, it'd be at least 4 years before conservatives could be displaced. So it's not really like looking at, like, you know, electioneering for candidates is really what's going to make the difference. And I think now, as would be true in other times, I mean, given we had a liberal majority that didn't manage to do a whole lot, even if they did stand in front of our conservative assemblymen trying to run through a bunch of single-family home projects. I think we got to look towards community organizing, and community organizing can be like showing solidarity with people in unhoused encampments and trying to help support, bolster and sustain a movement that's, between working class people and unhoused people, recognizing that that's as bad as it gets for unhoused people. That's what your landlord, can hold over you to demand more in rent, to demand certain conditions, to insist that like this is the way it's going to be, because you have the fear of losing that place with that landlord, and you know that, you know, if you don't have a co-signer, you're not going to be able to get into another place. You know, God forbid you have an eviction on your record, like there's you will be nixed out of the market. And if there can be some kind of like humane option for people there, you know, there's this narrative around like enabling that, like, oh, people are service resistant. You know, it's like people won't work 60 hours to afford themselves a place, and that's like seen as like a moral failing on their part or something. Well, I think if we can get a campground that's good enough that people would opt out of an apartment just to go and put down a tent right there, opt out of paying what they have to pay for an apartment, then we'd be in a much better situation, especially those of us who rent and have that holding over us. And so that amount of like solidarity, whatever that looks like, and it means protesting, it means fighting back, it means encouraging people to like take over some place just to give people a place to be, because necessity compels it, you know, and it is unconstitutional to be criminalizing homelessness in the way that they are. That community organizing also has to lead toward some like real policy initiatives. And I think what we should be looking towards 100% is ballot initiatives, especially to stop some of these big sprawling developments that are going, they're going in place. Ballot initiatives to approve housing for low income projects. Housing for could be campground, could be tiny houses, anything like that. Those are the sort of things I think we could win in a sort of midterm election before we have an opportunity to vote out the conservatives in power.
Yeah, I think that's extremely important, because yeah, I'm all for writing your representatives, but it can't stop there at all. Yeah, we got to get out and show up and organize, you know, because I see so often you come out and there's this energy, and all it's lacking is just an organization to shoot it in a certain direction to get something going. So yeah, hopefully somebody listening to this gets the spark in their mind and can be the next great. This being Sapient Sessions, I do a segment in the end where I ask my guests to ask our listeners three questions they want them to ask themselves, just around, you know, things you find important, and then maybe a favorite quote of yours.
I guess I'd encourage people to ask themselves, what sort of Chico would you like to see? Like who's it for? You know, what the good neighborhoods, like what makes the neighborhoods good neighborhoods? Like how can we incorporate all the people that make up Chico into the community permanently? And yeah, and then what can you do to make that happen? This one thing is